This is Yasa Sago, a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello everybody, this is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booker County, the mysterious Ozark in mid-America, and today, the show we have for you is
The Wolfman.
And welcome, Don Lobos. How are you?
How am I supposed to answer that, huh?
Yeah, thinking. Want to sneak up on us.
Hey, Otter, what are you doing?
Oh, nothing much.
Yeah, well, anyway, this is Dr. Ghost Wolf talking to Blue Otter. And I think we're going to talk about some... We're going to get to a story on the Virgin of Guadalupe. This is just an amazing story, and I've got some incredible real-life tales to add to it. But I think we were talking about some of the things that we're seeing in the news recently concerning Russia, correct?
Correct.
Now, what was going on there? They're moving to the underground cities in Siberia?
Well, there's a lot of military activity, and supposedly... been a lot of officials that have been moving into an underground city. See, it's been known for a long time that in both Russia and China that they have extensive underground preparations and food. You know, they have a civil defense plan in Russia and China. We don't. You know, it's almost like it's planned for them to survive and for us not to survive. And that's the way it looks. But anyway, you know, this is also coinciding with the seismic activity out in Kamchatka and a lot of...
Well, we have FEMA. Fools evacuating manipulated energy.
Yeah, right. So anyway, so do your magic. Take us where you...
Well, I think, you know, also I think one of the amazing things in that story was it's not just the military that tells us there's something going on. It was that a lot of the wild animals are migrating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. You know, it's sort of like what happened before the tsunamis, where all the animals started to migrate.
Yep.
And up.
Yep.
Because there was, like, hardly any animal death at all, just a few dogs and cats.
Yep.
But all the elephants and all the monkeys, and they all knew, and they headed straight for the hills.
That feels interesting.
So,
yeah, kind of.
Yeah, you know, we got to watch.
Kind of makes you wonder, I mean, all that's going on in the interior rather than on the coasts. So it kind of makes you wonder what's going on in Russia.
Well, there is a lot of earthquake activity. The area that we're talking about they're migrating to is up by Siberia, correct?
Yeah.
And we know that Siberian shamanism has never dwindled. It's just sort of gone underground. And especially in the last, I'm going to say 15 years at least since 1992, when I did the ceremony with the Lummi for the, they did their first ceremony for the salmon, and in like 80 something years. And we had a Siberian shaman come from Siberia to attend that. And it was like, I mean, it wasn't a big hyped up, promoted thing on the air or the media. They just knew and they came. All of a sudden there were these guys from Siberia. And they were telling us about, at that time, they were talking about the end times, and they talked about all these underground cities, that literally cities, city complexes that were built, and that they were trying to connect to these ancient caves. Once again, we're back to these ancient caves and tunnels, which seem to be established sometime after the first cataclysm, I'm going to say, before the or during the Ice Age, which is how they communicated and traveled from one place to another. And, you know, I've never verified all of them. I verified the ones here in the Southwest to a degree. In other words, there are tunnels that go all the way from Bolivia all the way up to Canada. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, where I am in New Mexico, there are thousands of miles of underground tunnels everywhere. I mean, where I live over by Sandia, which is where they have that great, strange laboratory up on top of the mountain, but they send everybody over to the restaurant and to ride the tramway to take their attention from all this bizarre stuff that's going on up there. I know they have an atomic pulse generator. Whatever that is doing up there, I don't know. It's sort of connected to harp and those kinds of elf frequencies because the animals react to it. The animals either get really spooky or really depressed, and you're trying to figure out what's going on. You walk around here sometimes, and you feel like you're on Valium, and you're wondering what's going on. And I'm going to attribute it to those strange frequencies because they're not constant. They're random. They come out at different times. You know? So, you know, what we know is there's a lot going on that they're not letting us know. And what we know is that a lot of the stuff that's going on has to do with this technology that they're always in official denial of. Well, we're not doing anything. And yet, on the second hand, they put out documents that say control the weather by 2005. Because if you control the weather, you control the planet.
That's interesting.
And so we know that their heart waves and things are affecting the jet streams. We know that the barium and aluminum and other metals that they're spraying in the chemtrails that aren't there, they're not doing it. But that these things literally soak up all of the water, and then the jet streams move them. So, in other words, they can move water from one area to another area. They can make one area a desert and the other area a flood zone. So, but that's like a whole show that I think you should show graphs and things, because people just hear about that and it sounds like something out of X-Files. But the scary thing is it's not.
Yeah.
It's probably all run by the Carlyle Group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know,
any names? No.
All those old James Bond movies, Dr. No, and, you know, all those old megalomaniac, all those old images start flooding back to you, you know. And,
they do, don't they?
Yeah, kind of interesting. Goldfinger and Dr. No and Thunderball and... really,
yeah, and, you know, and right now Sean Connery's doing the advertisements for, what is it, the Something 3 network to communicate to the world. I'm sitting there going, this is like right out of that movie that you made, Impact, or whatever it was. Where you came in, you took over this giant communications frequency system. But, yeah.
Well, that was not.
We're all getting a little science fiction, isn't it?
yeah, it is.
So, speaking of science fiction, let's get on to a different kind of science fiction that I think makes a really good story. I'd like to take a minute, because not everybody knows the story of the Virgin of Guadalupe, which is the appearance of the Virgin Mary, the mother of Jesus, in Mexico. So if I can indulge just a few minutes to give people a background.
Absolutely. What was it you were talking about?
Virgin of Guadalupe.
That's right, that's what I thought.
Well, the story sort of begins in 1523, which is just about 2 years after the Aztec capital fell to Hernando Cortez. And the story is around a little Indian man who was baptized then by the priest.
Juan Diego.
And his name is Juan Diego. And Juan Diego is on his way to Mass one day, and he's walking across a hill, and as he's walking across the hill, he's stopped by this blast of bright light. And from out of the white light steps this dark-skinned virgin, Madonna. She tells him, and she speaks to him in his Nahuatl language, and tells him that she is Mary, the mother of Jesus. And on this hill, the Paco Hill, she tells him that she wants him to inform the bishop that they're to build a church here. And so he's a little bit thrown by this. And it's kind of hard for him to get an audience with somebody from the Rosicrucian order. But he manages to do that. And he walks in, and he tells his tale. And he tells his tale of how the virgin appeared, what she said to him, and he discusses some of the conversations between he and the Virgin. The bishop becomes noticeably upset, turns around and says, how do we know that this isn't a contrived story? And so basically you are to say nothing about this until you bring me concrete evidence. If you don't bring me concrete evidence, I will have you crucified as a heretic. So Juan Diego obviously becomes a little upset. He avoids anything to do with the hill and a reoccurrence of what happened. And then a few days later, this is like December 1st, 1523. On December 12th, of 1523. No, excuse me, December 9th. 3 days later, his uncle becomes seriously ill, and they feel he's going to die. They send him out to get a priest. So, in doing this, he goes against his better judgment, and he goes and takes a shortcut through what they call Tepeyac Hill. When he does this, the Virgin appears again, and she appears in this bright light, and there's a rainbow over her. And she asks him if he had completed the task that she asked him to do. He tells her what the bishop said, and that the bishop needs concrete evidence. Now, we have to understand that Tepeyac Hill is in the middle of this very barren desert Mexico landscape, okay? It's desert. There's nothing growing there. And she points over to a direction, and there's a rose bush. And she says, take him the roses from that bush. So he goes and he gathers some of the roses from the bush. He goes down to the church. He busts into where the bishop is residing. And he's got this armful of roses. And he says, you wanted proof. And so he casts the roses down at the bishop's feet. And the bishop looks, because this is December. Roses don't bloom in December. Okay? And the bishop looks at these things. And then there's this explosion of light. And Don Diego is wearing this robe, this blanket that they put over them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's December and it's cold. And it's white, so it's probably made out of lamb's wool or something. And this light appears, this rainbow appears in the middle of it, and then upon the robe is this image of the Virgin Mary,
mm-hmm.
which becomes the Virgin of Guadalupe. That robe, the bishop, needless to say, the bishop did build the church. And that robe is still in the church. So it's 400 and something years old now, close to 500 years old. It has never deteriorated. Scientists have come in and done forensic studies on the robe, and it defies analysis. They cannot tell what type of pigment was used to put this on the robe. So this is the background story to the Virgin of Guadalupe, which happens right at the fall of the Aztec Empire. So I think that's a pretty interesting story.
It is.
Just there. And the fact is that the robe is still there. People can go look at it. It's sort of like the Shroud of Turin. And it has undergone scrutiny and scientific testing, and it defies analysis. They cannot tell what type of pigment was used to keep this picture on it, and it has never deteriorated. Okay? So when we get into these kinds of things, we see that miracles happen, sometimes based on faith, and sometimes that faith is not openly expounded by people. It's an inner faith, you know? It's like when you go down to the Yucatan, or you go down to Guatemala, or you go down to Belize, and you are fortunate enough to become intimate with the Mayan priesthood, you find that, in fact, the Mayan religion never perished. They have continued it. They do not walk around with anger in their hearts. And if you've ever been down there, they're just smiling, happy little people, okay? And the children are just incredibly creative. I mean, they never come up and beg you for money. They take little pieces of tissue paper, you know, and they make these little flowers. And they sell them to you, because they don't have any other means of income. And I remember I was down there in 1999, the last time I was down there doing ceremony. And we went to this little town with Humbats. And I was there with him and Drundalo Melchizedek. And we were walking through this little town. And he was taking us to this underground grotto. And in this underground grotto was this lake that they used for ceremony, and at the very top of the grotto was a hole, like it let light in, okay? And we went down and looked at that, which was pretty incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, you're looking at hundreds of years of, you know, little things laying around where people have been doing ceremony for hundreds of years, so it's underground. It's just, it was pretty incredible.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Anyway, so I come out and the little kids are all around me because I got a cowboy hat on and cowboy boots and they kept calling me Clint Eastwood. Hey, Eastwood! And so they all came up and I didn't know what to do, you know, because like I was like, there was like 30 of them everywhere, you know. So not knowing, you know, because when you're traveling across countries sometimes and across borders, you know, money becomes you don't know what it is. So I just reached into my pocket and I pulled out a bunch of coins and all the kids came and they gave me their little flowers, okay? And I just had this whole, you know, armful of little tissue flowers that they had made, all different colors, red, blue, yellow, white. And then I couldn't get rid of the kids. They were all getting very possessive, you know, and Humbus is laughing.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we see the survival of true spirituality everywhere we go if we have the eyes to see it.
Well, it's like Don Jaime Perez was saying that, you know, a lot of times, you know, when the priest gets done and leaves, then they've got a special secret door under the altar, you know, and they'll bring out their ceremonial things. I've been to those.
They do exist. And the Mayan priests still wear the traditional garments, shall we say. The particular ceremony that we did in the grotto, they had a woman down there, and she had to be in her late 80s, early 90s. And she started off speaking Mayan, and then she started off speaking all of these different names of saints in Spanish. And I remember looking at Humbus, and I said, with my American curiosity, I said, why is he saying the names of Spanish saints? And he said, you have to understand, Robert, that for 500 years, the language and to speak the language has been forbidden. So there's some language that they remember from talking stories. But the rest of it, when they run out of words to say, they just say the names of holy saints.
Oh.
Because I thought that was very curious. And here was this Mayan ceremony in the middle of a grotto in a cave all the way under the ground. And, you know, they were going through all this. So, you know, it was an amazing and dramatic, emotional thing to see these people doing whatever they had to do to hold on to their spirituality. And I think that there's a lot of people today who, you know, some of the anguish that people go through is they have a cellular memory of things, but they've never been trained in how to do things. Because those ways have been lost. Now, as far as myself and personal experiences with the Virgin of Guadalupe, I'm going to go, say, back to 1994. I'm living on the island of Orcas, which is off the coast of Washington State. People who live on Orcas do not call themselves Americans. They say that we're offshore people. America's on the mainland. And we were doing Sweat Lodge, and I had my good friend Larry Kenosha, who is Ojibwa. He's part of the Midi We Want Society, okay? Mm-hmm. He was in the lodge. The woman I was living with at the time and her two daughters were in the lodge. Grandmother Kitty was in the lodge. And there was another friend of Larry's who was an Ojibwa woman, Edna, who was in the lodge. Now, we're doing the Sweat Lodge, and the Sweat Lodge, my spiritual Sweat Lodges, my High Lodges, my Nippies, I always have children build them. The adults work side by side with the children. This way the children learn step by step. And that's a fun experience, because they always look, it'll never stand up. And then when you get through with it, they can, like, you know, lie over it and jump on it and do all these different things, and then they understand the geometry of how it was built, you know. And then it becomes a personal thing, because they got involved with it. It's not just shown to them and crammed down their necks. And it's like, you know, they participated in it. They saw the ground from nothing and the things that happened, and now you go in and you pour the water and you sing songs and you say the prayers and things happen. And I think it gives them this personal thing with it that they'll never lose in their whole life. No matter what happens in their life, what experiences they go through, and maybe they all grow up and become realtors, lawyers, and computer operators. But they always remember that, you know. Children always remember those kind of magical things that happened in their life. Like the first time you ever went to Disneyland, you thought Mickey Mouse was real. So we're sitting in the lodge, we're pouring the water, and the smell comes in the lodge. Now, the way I can describe the smell, it would be if you've ever been in a primordial rainforest, and you're around a place where the springs come up from the ground, and all the watercress is growing, and you have lily ponds and things growing naturally, and ferns, okay, and willows, and there's a smell. It's a very earthy, I call it a musky smell. But it's not like a musky smell when you walk into a cave. It's a very living, organic kind of a smell. But it's sweet. It's sweet. And this smell started to come into the lodge, and it was dominated by a smell, of roses. Now, Larry sits there and he goes, it must be a buffalo calf horn.
That's a very high vibration. In the world of aromatherapy, there is no more expensive oil than rose.
Right, but this is that higher smell. Frequency. This is that smell. If you're over 40, you remember what grandma's rose garden smelled like.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the roses today. This is that old rose smell.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Well, a musky rose.
It's very light, but it permeates everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not heavy. It's not thick.
Yeah, you know? It's not real sweet.
And this is mixed in with this musky smell of, you know, this primordial rainforest spring with the ferns and the watercress and the willow and all the things that grow along the side of a creek and a spring. And that real black, mossy soil, you know, that's always there. And so this is mentioned with this. So Larry goes, it must be the buffalo calf woman. Now, the children can see her. The children can see her. We can smell her. And we feel something's going on. We can't see her. And they describe her as this woman, and she's standing right over the rocks. And she is wearing she's dark-skinned. She's got light eyes. And she's got like a veil over her head. I'm trying to use their language, not mine. And I'm like, okay. And so I'm trying to equate this to the buffalo calf woman, who I would assume would appear in white buckskins or something. And Kitty turns around and she goes, is the Virgin of Guadalupe. Now, it was the first time I was ever introduced to that, besides knowing it by name and not knowing what it was about, like a lot of people. You know, we go to the gift shops and the truck stops along the highway in the Southwest, and we see pictures of Virgin of Guadalupe. I live in New Mexico. There's pictures of Virgin of Guadalupe everywhere. Sometimes they even paint them on the side of their houses, okay? And she's the Virgin Mary standing in this halo. The halo is surrounded by stars, and there's a rainbow. There's always a rainbow around her. And she's standing above a child. Now, we can assume it's supposed to be the Christ child, but we also, if we talk to the people who are into this, it's supposed to represent the children of the world. And that she is the Sacred Mother. So that was the first experience that I had. The second experience that I had was in 1999. We're up in the wilderness of the Bob Marshall Wilderness in Montana. We're doing a ghost dance ceremony. Everybody's there. I mean, Apaches are there, Siberians are there, Japanese are there, Aboriginals are there, Blackfoot, Blackfeet, Apaches, I said that, Hopis, the Hopi were there, the Hopi Sinem were there.
98?
Yeah, 99. And there we have the lodge down by this river. It's on this huge 40,000 acre ranch right on the edge of the Bob Marshall Wilderness. And the lodge is down by the river. And the reason why we built the lodge where we did was because they raised buffalo on that ranch. And a buffalo cow had gone down and given birth right in that spot, okay? So we built the lodge over the spot where she had given birth. And where we put the... When they give birth, they make like a little hollow.
Mm-hmm.
That they lay in and the little calf comes out. And that's where we put the fire pit. And, you know, as a matter of fact, Arvo Looking Horse was there. He was... And anyway, the women did the women's lodge there, and we had people stationed on two ends of the river, because in today's world, you have people who are not trained, and they don't necessarily know about respect, and sometimes they want to come down and see what's going on out of curiosity. You know what I'm saying? So you got to keep those people away. Not that they're bad people, they just don't know. They don't know any better. So we had one guard, so to speak, up at one end and another one down the other end. And the other one was me. All of a sudden, I hear this ooh and ah, because after they would do the lodge, they would jump into the river. Okay? And I'm hearing oohs and ahs. I'm hearing, oh my God. And I had to turn and look. Now, when you open the lodge, you know, it's real hot. So when you open the lodge, and in Montana, even in August, when we do the ghost dance, at night, it drops down 30, 40 degrees.
Uh-huh, that's dry there, too, so...
Yeah, and so, you know, you open the lodge, and all the steam comes out, right? And I'm looking at these women, and some of them are kneeling, and some of them are crying, and some of them are coming out of the river, and they're wrapping towels around them, but they're all stumbling, because right on the edge of the river, there's all the rocks, so it's not that easy to walk sometimes. But they're all walking over, and some of them are kneeling down, and they're all looking in this direction. I look in this direction, and I can't see it all. What I see is a mist, and what I see is rainbow colors going through the mist, okay? And I'm like, wow, you know, what is that, you know? Is it a northern lights or something? What the women talked about when they got out of there was that they saw the very same thing that the girls described. There was a woman. She was tall. She had dark skin, she had a veil, and she spoke to them about the virtues of motherhood. Okay? I didn't go down there because I wasn't supposed to go down there. So I had to wait. So, this was another experience. Again, I didn't recruit these things, I didn't look for these things happened. And so I started to become curious about the Virgin of Guadalupe. You know, and then of course, from my archaeological background, and studying the ancient texts and doing things, we know today that Yeshua ben Joseph, the Nazarene, was an indigenous person. That he was tall, he had reddish hair, copper skin, and light blue eyes. And he spoke very simple Aramaic. One of the reasons why he had his apostles around him was that many times they acted as interpreters for what he was saying because he only spoke Aramaic. And that he was an indigenous person. So when you put these things together, it would make sense that when they saw the Virgin Mary, the Virgin of Guadalupe, she was of a colored skin. She was, shall we say, ethnic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she wasn't the white Anglo-Saxon Celtic blonde girl.
Well, when Wovoka saw Jesus at Walker Lake, he said, well, and you got, you know, the Paiutes are almost black, but at that time they were very, very, very dark. And he said, well, he wasn't as dark as us, and he wasn't as light as the whites. He was kind of in between. And mm-hmm. and in the 30s, when John, the man that they called John Frum, appeared to the Tanna Islanders at the time when they were being exploited by the French missionaries, this man appeared and lived with them for a year and told them. It was really, really interesting because I was watching ABC News Tonight back in 98, and Bill Moyers or somebody comes on and starts talking about, you know, the cargo cult and John Frum and this whole thing. Talks about this man that came to them and lived with them, and when they described what he, the first thing that he told them, it was almost word for word what Jesus had told Wovoka and what Wovoka had reported. And they said that he lived with among them for a year, told them to remember their original religion and not to get suckered in by the missionaries. And he also gave them a drink to drink before they went into ceremony that kind of put them, it wasn't a drug effect, but it was just kind of a, it just kind of relaxed them a little bit and taught them some songs. They lived with them for a year and then disappeared. So yeah, he's not black, not white. He's in between.
Well, another curious thing. I mean, besides the fact that this robe has not deteriorated in over 465 years, and the scientists cannot figure out how and what kind of pigment was used to create this portrait, nor can they explain the quality of the portrait. I mean, the kind of artwork that Native Americans would have done then, or Mesoamericans, or Amerindian, we get lost in terms today. But the people who were down there, the Nahuatl-speaking people, did not have the ability to paint this kind of Sistine Chapel kind of portrait, okay? And the other amazing coincidence is that this hill, okay, this hill, Pipayac Hill, is the very site that the Aztec temple was built, dedicated to Tonatzin, who is the earth goddess, the mother of the god, and the protectress of humanity and children. Okay? It's on the very site that that temple was built, and the Spanish, of course, destroyed it, which is why the hill was all barren. And again, there is a basilica that is built on the site today where this robe still exists. Anybody can go down and see it. And of course, there's a million stories about the miracles that happened when she comes into our lives. And sometimes maybe the reason why I'm going into this story is that, you know, those of us who believe in the Creator and who believe in the gentleness of life, you know, the lambs of life, we cannot lose heart in these times. Because if we don't lose heart and we just keep faith, and regardless of how you personally express it, it doesn't matter, my friend, how we express it, as long as we are genuine and clear with intent. And when we do this, we'll see the miracles. Things will happen, and doors will open that defy everything that you heard in the State of the Union message.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Did I get too boring?
No, you sure did. Yeah, so you didn't hear about this in the State of the Union message, did we?
Yeah, well, I got my own comments.
It's fascinating.
Why is the president talking to the U.S. Congress? He's talking to them like they're sixth graders.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, excuse me. Who do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept waiting for the guy to say something. He didn't say anything. I mean, it was all hype. It was like, there was nothing about anything. I mean, it was like a ridiculous speech on one level. I mean, you know, he didn't say, well, I'm going to do this, and we're going to approach this way, and this is what we're doing. Everything was like this propaganda media commercial for Pepsi-Cola, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or was that just me? Was that just how I saw it? You know?
To tell you the truth, I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah.
You know, years ago, there was some prophecy I read somewhere that said that in the last, you know, 3-4 years, that you'd want to turn off your TV, throw it out, shoot it, whatever, you know, to stop subscriptions to the newspapers and just go live. You know, they said because the stuff that you'd be hearing would really disturb you. And I know, this week, you know, they've been talking about, you know, some really heavy-duty solar events. And I know a lot of people have really been agitated.
A lot of intense solar flares.
Yeah, you know, I hear a lot about animals that, you know, much of the little dogs, they get along famously, and, you know, they trade off on the bone, you know. Well, last night, you know, they're both laying down at the foot of my wife's bed, and they start going at it hammer and tong. And, you know, usually if they ever do fight, they haven't had a, I mean, when the little dog first came into our lives, you know, less than a year ago, the old one had been around for 10 years, and there was some jockeying for position. But all of a sudden, they wouldn't stop fighting. I mean, they're just and we're just going, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then we're hearing about our friends that are, you know, fighting with their spouses, and this doesn't usually go on. And, you know, so something's really been going on, and people, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, what is going on and how, you know, people like No Eyes said that this kind of thing was going to be happening.
Very good point, because No Eyes talked about all of these train wrecks and things that were going to happen, and look at the news.
Right, and how the vibrations of Mother Earth is changing, and if we don't change with it, we're going to go...
Okay, let's just come back, and we'll have one more closing statement on this, which is that in July of 2002, Juan Diego was canonized as a saint.
That's right, I was going to bring that up. It's fairly recent. And, you know, there's a lot of Mexicans that don't even believe he ever really existed.
Well, these people don't believe you and I exist.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I know.
Some days I get up and don't know how he exists.
There's some people that like not to exist. I know that. Yeah, and
I wish I was corrupt, my brother, because I could make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I got a feeling, I mean, I just really have a feeling that we're just at the edge of things. Things are changing here.
Yeah, this week everything's gone wrong here. We lost one computer to fire in the mid-December, lost another one to a mishap earlier this week, and we're running on a loaner. A lot of people just, I felt like really isolated this week and depressed with all this going on. Well, the longer I know you, the more I can't believe.
Yeah,
it.
The longer you know me,
the
crazier I get. Right?
I've never met you personally. We've had a lot of things go. You know, between.
I've been down by your house.
You know.
You felt me. I heard you say to Betty, "That must be Wolf."
Oh yeah, you've been. I'm sure you've danced around my bed a time or two. And
well, I never do that. I would dance around. I'd always knock first.
But we've got, you know, we've got a deep, lasting friendship, even though we've never physically shaken hands. People are going through stuff, and everybody needs to remember that the Bible talks about if you have fear during this period of time, you'll be caught in a snare. And it also says that things will happen that men's hearts will fail them for fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you go on.
Well, you know, but the thing goes in there that has to be inserted in that is that a lot of that stuff comes from dogma and religious propaganda,
mm-hmm.
where you believe what I say or you will go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, first of all, there is no place called hell. Let's get over this, okay? There's not one place where they're selling real estate called hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if there is a Lucifer the way he was prescribed to be, well, Lucifer created the smell of roses, the sound of laughing water, the feel of soft ferns against your skin,
mm-hmm.
the understanding of what silk was, and he taught people about hygiene and how to be clean and presentable. And so is this guy going to be the guy who takes on the job of taking care of every gang member and hooligan and criminal in the world? Like, what a boring job. Why would I do that if I was
really?
You know, I mean, there's just things about the child fairy tale that don't make sense. And if we can get through that part of it, then we can maybe really start accepting the miracles. Because the miracles happen. And, you know, it's how do you get through this chaos and this depression? Well, you know, for years, remember, I have been talking about emotional storms.
Uh-huh.
While everybody was out there talking about earth changes and this is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And once in a while, I do it, and I'll give you the stuff. I think we did at the end of the days. It's all happening.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, why dwell on death? Why not dwell on some of the miracles that can happen? And how do you get through? What do you do? How do we prepare for this? And then when we try to talk to people about how to prepare, they accuse us of trying to marketing earth changes merchandise. And the thing is, what is it going to take for you to realize you're at the end of the rope? This is the end of the movie, and if you don't start preparing for self-sovereignty, and you don't start figuring out what you're going to do with medicine when people get sick, and you don't understand what to do for pain, when people break a bone or they have pain, when you don't understand, like, how are you going to prepare water that you can rejuvenate it and put it back into a potable form from the ground after it's all been, you know, polluted to the point that the fish jump out of the water and die on the shore.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, what is it going to take for people to realize that if you take 10% of the time that you waste on all this hula-bula stuff on the internet and television. If you took 10% of the time you waste watching TV and spent it in reading about some of this stuff and putting a garden in the backyard or doing something that creates an alternative form of energy, so that when you're sitting there and something goes wrong with the main matrix of the electric company and the power goes out, you got lights. If you don't start doing a little bit now, well then what are you going to do when the shift hits the fan? Because it's coming. I mean, this is not doom and gloom. I mean, I sit there and I watch Pat Robertson sometimes, you know, because I like to know what the enemy's doing.
Pat Robertson, Pat Robertson.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, okay, the guy's a good guy. Everybody's a good guy. Everybody's a good person. But it's like, you know, I remember this guy with Hellfire and Brimstone in the late 80s and the 90s, and we were all coming out with the prophecies and things and things that were going to happen. And he called us New Agers, and, you know, anybody who believes in UFOs should be shot. I mean, and he made that statement.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and now he's selling videos about the very things that we talked about. The very things that, you know, Grandpa Wallace and people got out and talked about after they did their gatherings and their ceremonies, and they talked about to the people. They're doing these, you know, but you can now buy this end of days video for $29.99. And I'm like, okay, isn't this curious? You know, isn't that really curious, you know? So it's like, you know, people, everybody lost the original way.
Yep.
That's part of the initiation. Part of the initiation is we have to fall away from it. We have to lose the grace and the blessings of the teachings. We no longer have Grandfather David of the Hopi or Chief Dan of the Hopi sitting down, or Grandmother Catherine sitting down and telling us what the Hopi said. We now have to remember it and find it on our own. We no longer have the Grandma Kitty and Pete Ketchus and Frank Fool's Crows sitting down and telling us about what the elders said and how it should be. That bridge is now dissolving. You know, they're not here anymore. We don't have Tom Brown. I don't think Tom Brown goes around. If he does, he must be ancient by now. Tom Brown was the guy who went around with the original Hopi prophecies, you remember?
Yeah. He
and he was speaking up and down the west coast of America. I think there was a recording back in the 80s that he made up in Alaska.
Oh, Lee Brown.
Lee Brown, yeah. And Tom Brown's the other guy. He's with Stalking Wolf.
Yeah, we'll have that video up on the website here pretty quick.
And you know, it's an incredible story, and it's like I'm simply going to say what Grandpa Wallace said once. He said, "What do you tell these people after you tell them that this is going to happen and the flood comes? How do you tell them a new version? They keep wanting to hear you say something new, and you know there is nothing new." It's all been laid out. Everything that's going to happen has been laid out. And there's been new teachers that have come in that have expounded upon some of the ancient prophecies. There have been new movements to try to revive the ancient spirituality. And the ancient spirituality that is revived, that is real, how can I tell it's real? How can I tell if this guy's just not manipulating his personal agenda? How can I tell that this guy is not doing, you know, what is this Lakota guy doing in the middle of Delaware country teaching them Lakota ways of spirituality? And when I go and I talk to the Kadua back there, they go, and so we got to be janitor with the drum and clean up all these spirits that don't belong in our woods. You know, we got all these Lakota spirits running around here. Now, does that mean that I am maligning Lakota people who go out and do spiritual things and do inipi and that do real things and they keep their tone down and they do it quietly and they heal people and do things? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means that we have to learn the 4Ds in the 4D reality, which is discretion, discernment, disinvolvement. In other words, we're of this earth, but not, we're in this earth, but not of this earth. And then we have to learn determination. We have to be able to move through this myriad of all of these teachings that are all scrambled together like an omelet and figure out what resonates in our hearts.
Detachment is probably the word you were looking for.
Detachment, yeah, thank you. It's been a long time since I've been there. So discernment, discretion, detachment, and determination. And the fact is, there's nothing anymore. There's no Frank Fool's Code going to give you this mysterious, mystical lodge and you're going to come out and know it all. You know, you may go into a sweat lodge with somebody, you may go into a nippy, you may go into a kiva, you may go into a sacred prayer teepee. You may go into an old cave with an Anasazi. And they may be singing old sing-song prayers. You may be sitting in there with a Tibetan Lama, you know? The point is, when the door opens up, you have to be prepared to embrace it in its simplicity. And one of the things that the elders always told us, always told us, was that unless you have the heart of a child, unless you have most pure mind, you will not hear. And so, you know, we grow up and we become adults, and the tax people are chasing us, and the mortgage people are chasing us, and the computers break down, and the car breaks down, and then you go in to get the computer fixed, and you find out that it costs you more to get the computer fixed than it costs you for the computer. And then you say, well, what about if I trade the computer in on a new one? And they tell you, well, we'll give you $25 for it. So, you know, you sit there and you get discouraged by all these external earthly things, and it colors the child. It locks the child away. And it's the child that knows how to take you to where you got to go. It is the child who has always been with you. It's that quiet little voice inside you that has always said, why don't you go out and sit down under the tree? Just sit down under the tree. And you go, why should I sit down under the tree? And then you sit down under the tree, and all of a sudden a red-tailed hawk disappears right over your head. When we forget to listen to that voice, when we think that we have to have somebody's prescribed way, then we're going to have great difficulty trying to find it, because the Creator talks to all of us, every one of us. And He talks to us in a way and shows us things in a way that we can understand. It's always amazing to me when I've sat in rooms with great human beings who've spoken incredible things, and you walk out of that place and you start talking to everybody about what they heard, they all got a different story. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like when the Spirit's moving through people and it's talking, it talks to each one of you individually. It's amazing. You just sit there and go, wow, I guess there's many ways to look at a buffalo skull. I didn't hear that. You know, but they'll absolutely hear it. And it's, you know, what is that Simon Garfunkel song? A man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. It's like, we have to look for the little things. And one of the most important things in this time right now, one of the most painfully important things that we have to do, is get beyond our personal judgments, move beyond our personal agendas, summon up whatever is in us that is spirit, and move beyond fear. If we move beyond fear and we move together and we start acting together, the whole thing about humanity is that humanity is supposed to live in commonality. Is that the right phrase?
Yep.
We're all supposed to work together. Six guys working on a field, you can get it done. One guy working on a field, you think that the earth is cursing you, and the sun is too hot, and there's not enough water, and the horse isn't listening to you, and the tractor is always breaking down. Six guys working together, and the field gets done. And after the field gets done, you sit down and you eat, and you drink. And
you wrote a song about it. Many hands make work light.
Yeah, you know. And, you know, the Christian guys run around and they go, you know, oh, this circle is unbroken.
How much folk know all about that ethic?
You know, I come from the Willie Nelson School. You know, well, they tell me about a place where the skies are blue
Mm-hmm.
But it's like we have to start working together. Everyone's got to drop their shit and
mm-hmm.
start working together. This is not a time for the lone wolf. This is not a time for running off and proving your independence and all of that. That may be part of your rites of passage if you never went through it as a young person. And both women and men go through rites of passage. And there is no escape. The reason why in the old ways when we did things and we put adolescents through rites of passage, the minute that they hit puberty was when it was the time to go to rites of passage so that they wouldn't have to deal with all of the pain and mistakes they would make along the way in life if they didn't understand how sacred and precious life was.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
How sacred life really is. You know, you never realize what you got until you lose it. You ever hear that blues song?
Oh yeah.
You know, and the thing is, you know, we live in a world, I think, where we see everything on the media being proven to be a lie, and all these big corporate guys are going to court. You know, but it's the little ones that go to jail. They put Martha Stewart in jail because that Menron's still running around.
Yeah.
You know, what did she do? Give me a break. What did the woman do, you know? So she's loud. So she's arrogant. She's a woman doing business in a male world where women are not supposed to achieve, okay? And she has achieved. But it's okay because she's getting out of Camp Cupcake, they call it. She's going to be leaving Camp Cupcake, and she's taking over Donald Trump's role in The Apprentice.
Oh.
Isn't that wild?
Interesting.
But, you know, how sacred life is. Well, we take everything for granted. We take our relationships for granted. We take our... And relationships are something to be understood, because relationship starts with your relationship with yourself. And if you're not your own best friend, then you got something you got to work on. If you're not your own best friend, you're not going to be anybody else's best friend.
Yeah.
If you're not your own father, big brother, little brother, mother, uncle, if you're not that to yourself, if you do not respect yourself, well, then how can you possibly respect others? You wouldn't know what it's about. You don't know what the experience is about. So we got to start with ourselves. And I guess this is a little bit Haudenosaunee, you know, Six Nations, but the family hearth, from the family hearth and the relationship that spins from man and woman becomes the extended relationship of the whole tribe and then the whole nation. And how that relationship is dealt with from the get-go, and when I say from the get-go, what I mean is, how many people today get married, hook up, and they do the big wedding, and everybody comes, and they're buying flowers, and they're getting wedding gowns and buckskin dresses and doing the ceremonies and worrying about the food and doing all the stuff, and not 1 minute is spent, excuse me, on how we are going to develop this relationship. What is the purpose of this relationship? What do we want to see come out of this relationship? Now, some of that's hormones, but a lot of it is just not clear thinking. And then everybody winds up together, and then they wind up splitting up, and then they wind up walking around with hate and anger in their lives, and then they get tangled up with somebody else, and they get tangled up with them because of sexuality and not the things involved between talking to each other. Remember, when it's all over and the fireworks stop, you know, and the drums stop beating, you got to talk to each other. And if you don't have the ability to talk to each other, and you can't be best friends, and you can't constantly, I don't want to say support and then have it misunderstood that that means that everything you say, I have to agree with. Support doesn't mean that you agree with everything the other person says. I mean, there, but you know, you and I are going to be friends for life, but there have been times that you and I have looked at each other and say, where are you coming from? What friends do is they realize that when they reach that point, they have to talk through it. And then when they talk through it, amazingly, they reach a mutual understanding. And we've lost that ability. Everybody's fighting for, you know, I'm right. But it's reached a point where relationships have become abusive, and we're in this constant contest of dominant and subordinate.
I think email, I read one back in 97, one elder said about email, and he tried it. He says, this horse runs too fast. You don't see the person, you can't read their body language, and, you know, there's so much flaming and misunderstanding because people, for years and years and years and years, well, back in my father's time, you know, they were taught to communicate through writing. And it's like I was sitting 3 a.m. the other night watching this thing about the English language and how it evolved, and Gregory Chaucer, this guy started to recite the beginning of the Canterbury Tales, you know, Wang Doth a Prela, and I was going, oh, this is what my dad used to talk about, because my dad used to tell me what a crappy education we were getting, and they were taught to communicate in writing, and then you go for 60 years, and then all of a sudden email is introduced, which is instant written communication, and then the internet springs up, and all of a sudden people have to learn to communicate in writing again, and you have just massive hate fests going on, you know, because people really don't know how to write and sculpt.
Well, they don't know how to think.
Well, that's
you know, in order to write, you got to know how to think.
Well, you know, I have had a couple of experiences lately. You know, with one person came to me, was asking me about some things and talk about some personal things in their life, and I gave them some advice. And then they didn't like the advice, and all of a sudden they started putting words in my mouth, and now it's down to 3 and 4 generations. It all began with, I was saying, okay, you're a native person, you need to go to ceremony, you need to get a healing. And now, 2-3 weeks later, they're writing a third person saying that I told them they all had to be good little Christians, and, you know, and I'm going, you know, what is wrong with this picture?
Right.
You know, it's just absolutely amazing, you know, and oh, man, it's just so maddening.
Well, because we've forgotten how to live in a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, we have forgotten that to be human. I remember years ago, I went to a performance by Carlos Nakai.
Yeah.
And he spent the first 30 minutes of his performance talking about life and why he was able to play the flute and do the things that he did and things that he learned when he was younger, you know. And, like, we, you know, when he was younger, he was taught by his elders that you're all born as two-leggeds, but you're not necessarily all born as humans. That to be human, you have to be accepted into the society. And you had to go through rites of initiation. Because you had to learn what it meant to be human. And to be human meant to live in commonality, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that when you live like that, that's what made societies that survived, changes in governments, changes in civilizations, changes in dominant race. I mean, we sit here and look at the Americas, and we are a very strange place, the Americas. The Europeans are still in denial that everything about their history we have written in our history on the stones and in the caves, okay? That when they came over here, they were not telling us anything new. We were just sitting there going, how come you believe it's all in the book? We know it's all over the place. I can take you to 100 places where you see that. And, you know, we move into, again, you know, I'm going to keep going back to the Haudenosaunee book, and I don't know what the name of it is. I don't even know if it has a name. But it talks about how the society is set up, how it starts from that family hearth. How from that family hearth, you have grandma and you have grandpa. Grandma and grandpa have daddy and mom. Daddy and mom have the daughter and the son. And the daughter and the son then recreate the family hearth from its beginnings. And the family hearth is taught in a very strict way. And they had their society, where they had the warrior society, they had their grandmother society, and then they had their sachem or spiritual society. And things were kept in specific areas. If you were chief of the tribe, well, that meant that you were chief of the tribe. It didn't mean that you were the sachem. It didn't mean that you were the holy man. It meant that you were the politician. You were the one who went in there, and when two people were fighting over a deer hide, you were the one who settled the dispute. That was your role. When it got onto the spiritual aspect of what was wrong, they sent you over to the sachem. And then you sat with the sachem. But all of these societies are like, it's part of, it goes to, how many parts of you are you? Is there a spiritual part of you? Is there a father side of you? Is there the little boy side of you? Is there the warrior side of you? Is there the lover side of you? Is there the jerk side of you? Of course, anybody who does not admit that there's a jerk side of them won't hear anything I'm saying. Okay? Because they think that their stuff don't stink. And the fact of the matter is, everybody makes a mistake, and you keep making mistakes. Even when you become anointed, you still make mistakes. The deal is that you're willing to deal with them, you're willing to accept that you made a mistake, and you're willing to do the hardest thing. The hardest thing that anybody has to do was just to admit that even though you thought it was right, maybe there was another way to do it. Now that's real hard. You know? And it's the soft heart that becomes the strong heart. I remember, I mentioned earlier in a misnomer, and I'm sorry, Lee Brown, I mentioned Tom Brown. And Stalking Wolf was a real guy. Stalking Wolf is not a make-believe entity. And I remember Stalking Wolf, one of his teachings, where, you know, you have to accept your own fallacy and your own folly to become a warrior. Because when you do that, you become mutable. And when you become mutable, you become human. And when you become human, you can change. And when you change, you become like the river. And the river is always different, thus it's always the same. The river always remains the river. When you become like stone, you shatter. You know. Speaking about old things like that, you and I talked a lot about No Eyes. Remember No Eyes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, No Eyes was brought about in the teachings publicly about No Eyes. And she was a, do we call her Chutwa or Ojibwa?
Ojibwa, she's a Mary Summerine teacher.
Okay. Well, to those people who want to say she was Choctaw, I'm sorry. I was taught also she was Ojibwa. And she talked about these times that we're in. She talked about this struggle between who we are and the fact that when you're good, you have the dark tumblers that come after you. You have the dark forces that jump on you to test you. She talked about these times in specifics when she talked about there'll be accidents in amusement parks. There'll be many, many train wrecks. Now, I think just in the past week on the media news, there was at least 5 major train wrecks. I mean, major train wrecks. Okay? And, like, she talked about planes falling out of the sky and everything starting to break down. She talked about the emotional storms that would come. And I remember when I was young and learning and thinking that everybody out there had the seed of good, I listened to these things and I said to myself, this is going to be the problem. The problem is going to be, how do we heal the people? Later on in life, Grandpa Wallace used to say to us, the hardest thing that we have to learn is we're janitors with a drum. We have to go around and correct everything that's wrong. So all we are is janitors with a drum. And the hardest thing we're going to have to do is to correct the human mind. Because it doesn't think right anymore. He used to say, we lost our drum. We lost the beat of the drum. We lost the drum that we used to all hear. And, you know, I think now there's a lot of truth to that. We don't listen to the drum anymore. You know, like you're talking about this internet writing back and forth. It's not writing. It's emotional expounding. It's shooting from the hip. It's like, you know, whatever hits you in that moment, you say, and you go, oh my God, why did I say that?
Oh, yeah.
And people have, like, they're absolutely vicious. I mean, I sit there, I don't do chat clubs. I get invited over, like, when you come and talk to us, and I say, no, I don't do them. Because what happens is, if I say something that you and your programming and your dogma does not accept, if I say something that you're in denial of, if I say that you're an asshole for beating your wife, and you're trying to justify beating your wife, well, then you're going to get up on a chat club, and you're going to fire all this bullshit at me, because I'm putting you in the light.
Now, this is really interesting, because the last time you came on, I had a fellow from St. Louis contact me, and he was all complaining about, well, you know, I'm offended at what Dr. Ghostwell said, because, you know, any true Christian understands that it's not that way. And I wrote him back and I said, well, I said, if you were a true Christian, you would not be offended, because Jesus said, be not offended. You know, that was what I started to teach the guy, you know. It's kind of like, you know,
true Christian, that's a funny word.
That's a funny word, isn't it?
You know, a true Christian. I don't know any organized religion that follows the true teachings of Yeshua ben Joseph.
Here.
They talk, Yeshua was compassion and loving. He was understanding and healing. He was the epitome of male and female in one embodiment. He judged no one and no thing. And he spoke in great wisdom. I had a conversation the other day with a bishop, because, you know, what some people may not understand is that I am an ordained, credentialed minister, okay? And I'm also in the apostolic order. So go research what that means. That means that me, like Solange Gardner, can go into the Vatican and go into the libraries, okay?
You're in the apostolic order that comes down from Thomas. And I've seen
all the way down from Thomas. So it's all about the apostles.
Yep.
And, you know, my belief in Christianity has got to do with, what did Yeshua teach? Because I looked at the Bible, and like I was talking to this bishop, and I was going, where are the teachings? I see the stories, but I see about 2% of the teachings. Where are the teachings? and the teachings of you know, true Christianity. That's a funny statement, because like a true Christian tries to make themselves as the Christos. A true Christian tries to make themselves as the Magdalene. Because people, there was a Yeshua and there was a Magdalene, and they did have children, and there's historical records that validate it.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Done. Last night, it's funny you should ask
that.
Did you
tally?
706, I think, was less.
706.
Yeah.
How do you find the energy to keep doing it night after night?
Oh, well, now it's the show evolves. You know, Marie and I change it up every once in a while, and so it keeps it fun. It keeps it exciting. The audience last night was just amazing. They were just. I love hecklers. I love when I do.
People heckle you?
Well, yeah.
Kind of, just to kind of get a reaction.
For fun. There's interaction with the audience, and I love that because it just changes it up a little bit and keeps it fresh.
Keeps it.
And the band we probably have the best band in Las Vegas.
How many numbers do you think you do on the show?
Oh, I don't know.
It rotates out all the time.
Yeah, it changes constantly. I do this number called Yo-Yo, and the dancing. It was a hit we had back in the early 70s, and we do all this dancing. It just wears me out. It's my cardio for the day.
Well, you were the Dancing with the Stars champion in 2009. Where
Last
is your mirror ball trophy?
It's in the lobby of the Flamingo.
It is?
Yeah, it's in a glass case so Marie doesn't steal it.
I have not seen it. I have to go by there and check it out.
Yes.
And, you know, every time my brother stays at the Bellagio, he says you're staring at him.
I am. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, the big Donnie and Marie picture on
yes.
the yes.
Is that weird driving by and seeing that every single
I
time?
I call it my ego picture. If ever I'm feeling bad, I just drive past the front and look at it and say, that's me.
it's a pick-me-up. And yes. You're going on tour to
yes.
the UK and doing a holiday concert as well.
That's right.
When is that happening?
Well, that's the UK is going to be in January. Then we go to Los Angeles and Phoenix and Salt Lake City for the Christmas tour in December.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nonstop.
It is. And you do your radio show as well.
Radio show, yeah.
And then also, you know, we get a lot of comments. So people have been emailing me and saying they love how you look. Like, you're ageless. It's incredible. So
I have a secret.
What is your secret?
I have a secret formula, and it's a company called Life Vantage. They came up with a product called Protandem. Now, what causes the aging process is free radicals in our body, oxidative stress.
Mm-hmm.
This Protandem stuff, I've been taking it for 2 years.
We have it on the table right now.
Clinically proven to slow the aging process down. It reduces the oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days.
That's
and I said,
secret.
I said, whatever, you know. So I tested it, and it works. And the nice thing, it's not pharmaceutical. It's real food.
I'm going to have to give it a try.
Oh, you don't need it. You look beautiful.
I want it, for sure.
But it works for me. I'm 94 years old.
I'm looking fabulous. And you know what? Your son is here with you. He made a big announcement yesterday, too.
That's right. He's going to have a baby. Well, his wife's going to have a baby. My fifth grandchild.
Your fifth grandchild. How many kids do you have, really quickly?
42 that I know.
Do you keep a GPS tracking device on all of them?
Yeah, sure. No, I have five wonderful boys, and three of them are married, and five grandkids.
It's a handful, isn't it?
And I feel like I'm 20. Thank you, Protandem.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Now, it's probably going to take everybody 10 generations to accept it, but I don't care who accepts it. It's the way it was. It's historical fact.
Well, he said that he obeyed every jot and tittle of the law, which means he had to do. So he called him rabbi, but you can't be called a rabbi unless you're married. And, you know, you would be betrothed, your marriage was arranged. And then by the time you're 18 years old, you were
married. Well, not only is your marriage arranged, but when you have sex is arranged, when you eat is arranged.
Yeah, yeah.
How you live your life and when you go through different things is arranged. This is how it's all arranged.
There could not have been any other, you know, the way they look at it still is that if you don't get married, you are committing murder because you're not bringing souls into the world, but you're literally killing.
Well, now you sound like a Baptist.
Yeah, well, no,
we're gonna have to watch that.
That's the way the cues kind of look.
According to the Baptists, nobody's going to heaven but them.
Yeah,
and I don't know what they're gonna do when they get there. There's this whole big crowd standing in front of them.
Well, they're gonna go up there and see all the fields.
And then how are they ever going to explain the fact that Jesus was in Tibet.
That's right.
And that Jesus in Tibet, which is where he got his name Sananda, and Sananda means the Ascended One.
Well, the Dalai Lama just a few years ago said, "We own your Jesus."
After the resurrection, and people, we have to understand that there is a misnomer going on when we say that Jesus died for our sins. This is a really strong statement. And I'm probably going to get 13 guys with spears coming after me. But I don't care, because Yeshua did not die, he ascended. Yeshua became an immortal. He went through all of the initiations of all the mystery schools, from the Druid to the Tibetan to the schools in Egypt to the ones that nobody knows about, so there's no point in mentioning them at this point. And then from there he moved his ministry to the world, exactly as he said to the apostles when he said, "There are other sheep in my Father's mansion."
He told them, "Go to the lost sheep of Israel."
And so then we go into all of the stories of the Pale Prophet, of Kosikoto, of Waikoma Tete, all these different names that he had here in the Americas, and all of the travels through back through Tibet, back through Siberia, through New Zealand, through Hawaii, into Tacoma, Washington, the journeys that he made down to the land of the Maya, that he made back up to Hudson's Bay, that he made to the Haudenosaunee. These stories go everywhere, and if you want to find out about it, well, read He Walked in the Americas.
Right, Tlacomo was one of his names.
And right, and
so was and his symbol in his hand was the hand Kabul. And I live in Kabul, Missouri, and there's this story about an Indian chief that lives here named Kabul.
Well, keep in mind also that one of the symbols of the ghost dance is the hand held up with the cross in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that symbolizes the nail hole. And that's a symbol of the ghost dance. That comes right from Wovoka and the people that were there. And they came to meet Kanishita Kanishiwa. Kanishita Kanishiwa, the great white chief. And the first one who appeared at the ghost dance was not Kanishita Kanishiwa. And he told them that they must continue their ceremonies. And then the whole ceremony was enshrouded under a strange orange cloud for days. And this, people, is not something coming out of Dr. Goswell's mouth. This is recorded
in the newspaper,
the Boston Globe.
Yep.
Going to the archives.
That color orange and the smell of orange blossoms is associated with the Christos, too. Like Rose is associated with his mother.
But he did show up. And, you know, for another time in another place, we can go into other mysterious predictions or prophecies about the appearance of the Christ, that he would appear again, and the fact that he did. The fact is, it was prophesied in the Christian religions that he would appear in 1890, and he did. He just didn't appear to them.
Yeah, Joseph Smith said that he would show up in 1890, but he didn't.
Well, yeah, and like I said, we can get into the details of that. It was also
that
around that time, a prophet would appear.
Yeah, so it was
and the fact of the matter is, Joseph Smith was a prophet. And the original teachings of Joseph Smith were in total accordance with the universal teachings of the Christos and the Pale Prophet. But my information comes from Native Americans, doesn't come from Christian doctrine. Even though I am a Christian minister, I'm one of these blessed radicals.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the term blessed radicals because I still have my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because truth is truth, and the greater truth can only open up the greater story. And the Pale Prophet appeared to many people in this land. And the testimonies to that are still written in stone. And I'm an archaeologist, so I know what that means. Okay? There's legend and there's myth, and then there's written in stone. And when the legend and the myth are authenticated by the story written in stone. That means it's the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even the way they teach you in seminary school.
Right.
I went to seminary school. But I was one of these guys who always asked embarrassing questions if they would just tell me to shut up, you know. And I said, well, I just have to figure it out, you know. The thing here is that, you know, we're now moving into a time. Why are we having all these emotional conflicts? Why are we having all these pains? Why are we having all these doubts? Why are we having, well, we have to understand that there's this little thing called the emergence. And in the emergence,
the birth pain.
If you can picture two glowing globes, one is one level of consciousness and the other is the Christ level of consciousness, and they're merging together. Well, the merging together becomes the great purification. And in the great purification, there can be no lies, there can be no deceits, there are no secrets. One of my teachers said, what would you do in a world where there were millions of Michelangelos, millions of St. Thomas Aquinas, millions of Quetzalcoatlus? What would you do in a world like that? That's part of the Christos. That's part of the purification. And in the purification, we go through the struggle of where that which is false, which became the written word, which is why the indigenous people around the world do not write their stories in words. They repeat them, and it's the indigenous peoples around the world. This is an important thing to understand. Everything is done in an oral tradition. Now, where did the oral tradition come from? Where the oral tradition came from, in its basics, is that if I speak a certain dialect, there are certain nuances and intonations in that dialect. That dialect may have as many as 10,000 different enunciations and nuances. But each one of those and nuances and intonations are precise and exact, and they mean a specific thing. Now, when you can't understand the language, like the people who don't understand Spanish, all it sounds like is a poco de crono, de oros, de aros. They go, what are they saying? Because they don't understand the nuances and intonations. Okay? So when you speak the oral dialect, what happens is those nuances and intonations have to be precise. If they're not precise, the story's not truth. So, for generations and generations, and they still have it, and yes, I promise you, I will send you the tapes from the last Haudenosaunee thing that I attended, where they did the whole story of life. You know, it's like seven tapes. And they do it every year. And the Mayans do it. And the Baptists, I know the Cherokee, the Kutua do it. So I'm assuming the Kutua do it. The Kutua and the Kutua. One with the D, one with the T. The Kutua being the Western branch of the Cherokee, and slap me if I'm wrong. And the Kutua being the Eastern. And they still recite all these things orally. And it goes all the way back to the Bach, which I should get you in contact with Stuart Rice on Hawaii to tell you the Bach saga of the original root race, the father race of the earth. That goes in and ties us all together. Now, they don't have all the answers either, but they have a large part of the deck. Whenever Stuart hears people talking, he goes, the problem is you're playing with 50 cards. They're not playing with 52. And if we put it all together, and this is what this time is about, you know. We're in this time now where the pages of history, the pages of prophecy, there's a blank spot. We can sort of see what happens afterward, although it's kind of foggy as to why it happens that way. And why these different kinds of events happen, and some of them are so radical to the other. And then up until about 1994, everything was methodically, linearly, the way it happened. And then we go into this blank spot where even the Hopi say, there's nothing written. There's nothing written. If we go away from what the Hopi and the traditional elders say, and we go to the Montauk people tell us that when they would travel to the future, when they would do these different things, there was this blank spot that they couldn't get in. We're in that blank spot. And the blind spot is where we're literally writing our destiny by living it. This is the part that scares people. This is the part that makes people fearful because they're unstable, because they're listening to all of the dogma and they're going, it doesn't work. It doesn't apply. And so they're walking away. And then we're seeing all the dark side of everybody and we're going, the world is evil. The world is no different now than it has ever been.
That's right.
It has always been this way. It's just that now you have media. So now, in 7 seconds, you can see about what this pedophile did somewhere to some young child somewhere, and you go, the world is evil. It has always been this way.
It's just that we're just noticing more now.
Correct. And we have always had a struggle. That's why the elders used to say, when you walk down the good red road, it's a narrow road. But it's the road to forever. Well, being a minister of the Golden Drake, being a minister who understands the both sides, being a minister who was taught by the elders about the Fell Prophet, did not Yeshua say, I am the way, the truth, and the light? It's walking the narrow road. And you have to, and then the teachings of the great ascended masters was you always have to walk the middle road. Edgar Cayce says you have to walk the middle road.
Uh-huh.
And people used to go, what do you mean the middle road? You mean I don't feel anything? You mean I walk in the middle? I don't commit to anything? No. The middle road means you're walking in a world where there are extremes. Wherever you go, you will hear one intellectual argument versus another intellectual argument.
Martin Luther.
You'll hear one argument of faith versus another argument.
Martin Luther said that moderation in all things.
Right. So you walk through the middle. Like Edgar Cayce said, give yourself a break. Nobody told you never to eat bacon, just have a little. You know? No one told you never to have a glass of wine, just have a little. Walk in moderation. Never give to either polarity.
Right. He used to smoke a few cigarettes a week because he knew a few were good for him. But, you know, we're talking one or two or three, maybe one a day, you know.
Slap a back today, he probably smoked countless.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a little, not to get off track, but you know, Mormons got this thing about not smoking. Well, there was one prophet.
Also have a thing about not drinking coffee.
Well, B.H. Roberts, I mean, this guy, I mean, you had to peel him off the ceiling, you know, and at one point, this is, you know, turn of the century, and this is after the Word of Wisdom came out. I mean, the first president called him in, and they said, Brother Roberts, you know, in your case, we're going to ask you to violate the Word of Wisdom. We want you to smoke one cigar every day. It will settle you down. But go on, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, but you see how this dogma has been created to knock people off the path.
Yeah.
Because they ask you to achieve an impossible goal, to not be human.
Yeah.
To deny everything in you that's human. And to go on to this goal, you have no other choice but to fail. And why would the God of gods, the creator of all things, the mother, father, God of everything that is and will be, why would they create a situation where you were never given a rule book, you were never told what was wrong until you made the mistake? And then when you made the mistake, you were just simply condemned to hell and they went down the road. It sounds like Donald Rumsfeld to me. That's not what the Creator did. The Creator is very forgiving. The Creator always allows. Yeah, there are rules. There are medicine rules. And the medicine rules, simply stated, are when you're in innocence, you're forgiven of all things. But once you're in knowledge of, you better watch your step.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like with people, I get lots of people talk to me, send me letters. I mean, they cry their souls, they do things. I look at them sometimes, Otter, and I go, you're so blessed. You have so many wonderful things. Why don't you just be happy being a rabbit? Being a rabbit is okay. You know? It goes to Chief Plentycoops with the Cheyenne, where his big medicine was the chickadee medicine. Because what's a chickadee, right? everyone who comes out and takes Indian names is Roaring Eagle or Thunder Bear or, you know, Lightning Buffalo. I mean, you know. Well, Funny Coop said, you know, remember the wisdom of the chickadee. The chickadee goes into everybody's house. He knows everybody. He can walk up and down the tree. Both ways. He can walk sideways. The chickadee is never attacked by anybody. And the chickadee knows everybody's secrets. And the chickadee never judges. And when the eagle comes back to his nest and the chickadee is sitting in the nest, they don't fight. The eagle doesn't kill the chickadee. And so the chickadee, you can sit and gather all the wisdom from because he knows everybody's secrets. You know, so what's wrong with being the chickadee? Why do you have to be Thunder Eagle and Roaring Bear? I mean, why? You know, what's wrong with being the squirrel? What's wrong with being a mouse? You know, unless you're living up to an image. And, you know, we're fed this image every day. We all have to be Bruce Willis and Julia Roberts, you know. And if we're not, well, life gets bad. I mean, if you're going to go out there in the West, you have to be Kevin Costner. He probably wouldn't have made it, people. Okay? The thing is, why don't we stop judging ourselves? Why don't we start going back to, you know, every day get up, look at the little things, look at the fact that, oh, wow, there was a flood, but my house is still here. Oh, my goodness. Everybody got sick. But, you know, if we didn't get sick, we would have gone to this thing and this would have happened. You know that saying, and it used to frustrate me. Well, obviously, God has prevented you from doing this because he has something else in mind.
Well, I cannot even imagine. And just for example, last night, you did a show last night that was 90 minutes starting at 7:30.
That's right.
Then you went through that. Then you came here. You're here this morning.
That's right.
Doing all of this.
It's nonstop. I don't sleep anymore.
No. All right. So where do you get the energy? Seriously, I mean, look at you.
Well,
I mean, we've known each other a long time. Yeah. We've passed. You don't ever get older.
Well, thank you. It's quite funny because, you know, people are kind of shocked when they hear that I'm 54 years old, and they say, how do you keep your youth? I have found something, Dr. Phil, that I think is the closest thing to the fountain of youth.
Oh, you do have a secret.
I have a secret, and I've never really talked about it. Well, I've been doing this for the last 2 years. It's called Protandem, and it works. And I'm telling everybody about this.
You feel differently.
I do.
Because you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're hitting the times. You're getting where you're supposed to be.
I have
you're
to doing be what... on the spot all the time.
Now, I've got three sisters, and we get along great 1,500 miles apart. I cannot imagine.
It takes me 1,600 miles.
Yeah. But I can't imagine working with my sister every day. What do you do when you have disagreements? Because you have to have disagreements, right? Because you're both producers.
Yeah, we're both producers, and that's difficult because we're both type A. And you're going to butt heads. What's really interesting about the Donnie Marie duo is that it doesn't really matter how much we butt the heads when that curtain goes.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
You know, if you're trying to do something and it screws up and the computer breaks down and the car breaks down and the phone gets disconnected. I mean, everything in the world that could happen, Murphy takes over, you know?
Sounds like an Indian house.
And like you're sitting there, Robert, and, you know, curse the rocks, you curse the trees, you curse the water, you know? The damn eagle is flying over your head, just shit on your hat, you know? And it's like you're rolling into this thing, and it's like, you know, it's the warning sign that you stop looking at the little things. It's like, it's the fact that you can get up and walk and not be in pain. It's the fact that you can move from your chair to the car and be able to do that. It's the fact that you're sitting there going, things aren't really bad, but you know, I'm sitting here smoking a cigarette, drinking a cup of coffee, and eating a hamburger. It's the fact that, you know, things are really bad, but you know, I'm warm. Do people say, when you talk about the original species and living in the old ways, you know, and everybody went to that extreme a couple of years ago, and they all went out to the wilderness, And it's a bitch. I mean, chopping your wood every day, hauling water in buckets, doing all this stuff, feeding horses, feeding the livestock. It is a bitch. You don't have enough time to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and you sit there, and it's not about that. It's not about going backwards. It's not about walking with our heads backwards. It's about walking forward and saying, okay, well, we take this technology, and technology's not evil. Technology's like the rake or the pitchfork that you take out to the field. This is how you're going to use it. A gun isn't evil, you know. If you go out and you call yourself a hunter and you get yourself an automatic AK-7, you know, whatever, it's like, you know, excuse me, but why do you need that to kill elk? I don't understand, you know. Because grandma used to kill him with a .22 off the back of a buckboard.
Especially with those neighbors you got in your area that get a little raucous once in a while.
Oh, well, there's a lot of camel guys out here. But it's like, you know, the gun is to that. You're out there in the mountains, and they're telling you you can't kill this elk, and your family's starving. And if you know what you're doing, you go out with one shot, you take down the elk, by the time everybody hears it, they don't know where the heck you were, and you come back and you feed your family. Okay?
Because if you shine a light, they'll know where you are.
How do you use your tool? I mean, you're better off with a crossbow.
Get that.
But how do you use your tools? How do you use your tools? It's like you're given the tools of intellect. You give them the tools of spiritual truth and prophecy, and, you know, one of the things that always bothered me is when I would give a prophecy, and, you know, I mean, I'm a little known by that, and people would go out, and I would watch all these spins come back on what I said, how people spin it to their advantage, how people can spin it to attack you. You see, that's the curse of words. When I'm giving you a prophecy, the tool that I have is either I speak words on the radio like I'm talking now, or I write them in my book. And what I'm trying to do is describe a vision of something that I saw. And it is very hard to describe a picture. I defy anyone to take a specific incident in their life and explain it totally articulately in less than 300 words. Any incident.
Right. When we come back in a minute, we'll talk about how hard that is. We'll be back. Well, we're back, folks. We just took a little break. And Dr. Ghost Wolf, when he goes to water, it's a little different than the way the Cherokees go to water.
I got your horses.
We were talking about the problem with words. Now, the correlation I would point out to my Christian friends is Bible talks about that the letter killeth, but the spirit giveth life. So you take it from there.
Well, to our Christian friends, judge not, lest you first judge yourself. Which is what Yeshua actually said.
I can see that.
Now, to not judge does not mean to not use discernment.
Well, didn't he say judge righteous judgments?
You know, to not judge does not mean not to use discretion. It's like, I really shouldn't say right now that I saw Mary with Bill and they were making teepee hopping over at the powwow. So not judge means that when you look at something that you can't understand, to have the courage to address it and not condemn it. Because there's a lot of things in the losing of society, the understanding of the understanding of society. Do you remember the movie Little Big Man?
Uh-huh. How can I forget it?
All right. I mean, and I forget the name of, what's his name? The sweet little Indian that said, you could sleep on my seat, you little big man.
Yeah. Especially okay. I see the garbage stuff where the Indians camp.
You see to a. But the thing is, okay, there was no judgments against these people. There was no judgments against these people. That is what they were. They were still human beings. There was no judgment about this. When someone was a warrior and the equivalent of an Indian redneck, there was no judgment against them. That's what they were. When someone could not articulate words and they were just physical people, there was no judgment against them. And what I see today is people going, how come this person is this way and that person is that way? And it's against what I believe, so I'm going to condemn them.
Well, it's that old Roman system where everything's got to be standardized, standardization of names. I mean, the Roman system is, I mean, it did some nice things. It allowed ideas to spread because at least it made the road safe.
You're a very benevolent soul. You must be Christian.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Because all I ever saw the Romans do was write the law down, and that created attorneys. And that's the biggest scourge of the earth that I've ever seen.
Well, the peace of Rome allowed travel to happen, you know, allowed the spread of, even though it was repressive in one way, the other side of the duality was that it allowed ideas to travel.
Yes, it did. And it also made it very clear that this is law.
It also helped that...
But then they started printing books.
Right. Also helped that Joseph...
How did the Romans do it?
Yeah.
I guess they wrote them all, right?
Yeah, right. Also helped...
They didn't have a printing machine yet.
Jesus' uncle was in charge of all trade for... He was noblesse securio. He was in charge of all trade for the Roman Empire, so it helped. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like... When you read the Bible... Please. And I've had a lot of dissertations back and forth between... proliferators of what the Bible says, and I go, but do you understand what the word means? Do you understand how it got from Aramaic to Greek to Latin to English?
Oh, no, they don't. They just figure...
Do you understand that when the word was said in its original context, it didn't mean that? So it's very painful for guys like me and Lawrence Gardner to go through these ancient texts and try to go back to the original root meanings of what they were actually trying to say, not what I was told they were saying. And then we have this whole other element, which is when you go and you read these ancient texts, we all know that there was nothing else but European history, right?
Right.
Nothing else happened anywhere else. Everyone was running around in loincloth eating bugs, okay? and yet, which is part of the reason probably why the Spanish had to destroy everything that they saw, so that he could justify that there was nothing better than European architecture, even though everything that was here was superior to European architecture, because even to today, they can't duplicate it. Okay? So the European way of explaining how pyramids were built is they had 400,000 slaves, and I think I went through this once with Daniel Brinkley. If they actually had 400,000 slaves, they would have to set one of those stones on the Great Pyramid in Egypt every 6 seconds.
That's a lot of fear and pressure.
I mean, that's a lot of stuff, man. I don't think they could even do that in Las Vegas, okay? It's like, okay, well, there goes that theory. So, yeah, it was done by commonality. Everyone agreed with it. And the other thing that everybody forgets is that these guys lived a lot longer than we live. Hello? They lived a lot longer than we live. There's an interesting thing that I just saw on the History Channel regarding Akhenaten and Nefertiti. Now, in every depiction of Akhenaten and Nefertiti, they show them with elongated skulls. One of the things that they were criticized in that period in Egyptian history was because Akhenaten did what they would call today realistic portraiture. Okay? It wasn't a stylized Egyptian portraiture. So they showed him standing there with big lips and a belly and rather feminine features and the cleft leg that he had. Okay? This was unheard of at the time, that they just did not do this because all art was ruled by religion. Okay. So we look at all these different things, and then we look at these academic archaeologists and forensic people doing the study on this particular mummy that they feel is Nefertiti. I'm looking at the mummy, and I do not see an elongated skull. So I'm sitting there as a rebel archaeologist, and I'm going, all right, what did the hats look like? Because they used to wear, you know, woven hats or beaded hats. What did the garments tell us about the shape of their skull? How come you didn't study that? How come you're not looking at the depiction of the elongated skull versus the short Homo sapiens sapiens skull? I mean, I can get into it, you know, with the language if I have to. And it's, okay, so that was Egypt. Well, that was Egypt, some people say, and that's how they dismiss it. Well, we have the same skulls in Peru. We have the same skulls in the Yucatan. We have the same skulls in the Four Corners area. We have the same skulls up in British Columbia. This is my work, people. So will someone please explain to me why this was never addressed, and then you claim that you did a complete forensic study? You didn't do a complete forensic study. You only did a study on what justifies the way your dogma says it has to be. And what we are learning today, fast and furiously, is that that's not the way it is. And you know that from conversations that we've had from some of the forensic studies they did on things that I found. Like, can someone explain to me what a woven robe, three-dimensional geometric robe, woven out of camel hair, was doing in a cave found in the Four Corners area of America? Hello? Okay, that's over 12,000 years old. See, I can't explain it, so I dismiss it. And I think it's the same thing with people's personal beliefs. And one of the things that I've always held is, even though I'm a scientist, and even though I'm doing what I do, and I have to, the hardest thing is to explain it. And so I've got all these things that I haven't explained sitting around, because I can't explain them yet in words. I can't explain some of these perfectly manufactured globes that I have from caves that are made out of crystal, and there is no explanation as to how they were manufactured. But they didn't do them with obsidian chisels, okay? I mean, there's no way to explain it. And yet these are things that come from these caves. And when I first started doing this, and I had some forensic studies done on some things, and they would say, well, this is at least 12,000 years old, this could be 25,000 years old. Well, I couldn't even bring that information out, because academia and archaeology said it was impossible, because it was all based on truth between the covenant of the church in Rome and the Muslims, and that all history began 5,000 years ago. And so now we know that, well, this doesn't work. We go to the Sphinx in Egypt and we go, well, this thing may be 28,000 years old. So we're coming up with things that science doesn't care. Science doesn't have a dogma. It doesn't have a religion. It says, this is what this is. This is what the microbes tell us. This is what the 300,000 amplified atomic microscope says, is that this is not carved by a chisel. So that leads us to say, well, what could do this? And then we're left to say, a laser. So we're coming, this is all part of this purification. And this purification is turning everything inside of us upside down. We were told this. We were told this by the Hopi. We were told this by the Mayan. We were told that this would happen. We were told that there would be the destruction, or the destructuraling. Actually, it was the destructuring, not the destruction. The destructuring of all religions, all political systems, all scientific systems. And what does that mean? How is that going to occur? Well, that's going to occur by the fact that you find out, well, wait a minute, you know. How do I explain the robe from the Virgin of Guadalupe? How come I can send it out to 500 labs and all of these scientists can't tell us what kind of pigment was used to create this? There's no explanation. There's no explanation why after 465 years. This robe has not deteriorated at all. So, in understanding the spiritual, we have to accept that there are things beyond science, and that there are things beyond words. And it's the faith in that that keeps us alive. It's the faith in that we cannot be all these condemned creatures of sin, because if the Creator created us, and He created us in His own image, aren't those the words?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's what happened, then if the Creator created us in His own image, and if there's a fault in us, then He created us in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the way it works?
That's right.
So, you know, I can't accept that. I accept that the Creator created us in perfection, and that the dogma created the imperfection. Because it's impure thoughts, not moral, impure, not childlike. You know, when you go and you accept a vision, when you accept that an epiphany has just happened in your life, regardless of what it is, whether you are in the sweat lodge and you see the buffalo man, or you're standing on a hill in the middle of the desert and the Virgin of Guadalupe appears, or the hawk sits on the tree and talks to you, or you're sitting in ceremony and your relative speaks to you, or you're doing Ulithi and you find out where the missing eagle wing went because the Pentecostalists show you where it went. There is no explanation for that.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress, and we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. more enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma, I've studied all of these, strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease?
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed, because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are, within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Words. All the words can do is tell you this is what happened when I was sitting there. And then everybody puts their spin on it. You see? Just like we're going back again to this internet thing and the viciousness between people. And they have these whole groups of people that sit there now and do nothing but create and proliferate negativity about people they haven't the slightest idea what they're about. They've never experienced them. They've never sat in their presence. They've never watched what they do. They've never done any of this. They work it all on hearsay. And we see this. You and I have also been victims of this. Where you sit there and you read the study, go, what? Have people running around?
I was in Texas, and I was picked up by federal agents.
Uh-huh. Have people
for selling heroin.
Right.
And what? And meanwhile, when that was supposed to happen, I was in Wyoming, for crying out loud, sitting in a sweat lodge with four Lakota elders. Or I may have been sitting having lunch with the federal agents that were supposed to have been arresting me in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there, where did they get this stuff? But everybody goes, well, I heard this. Look at what they said. Look at what they did. And it's like, you know, it's like gossip and slander.
Why should we have
the sins of the tongue?
They only attacked you for 1 year, and then they went to work on our bill.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, so they screwed you to the wall for a year, and then they went to work on our bill.
Well, yeah, and you know, one of the funny things about that is I was attacked by all these groups, these so-called Native American groups that do not represent elders. They do not represent the Gray Eagle Society. They do not represent the Hopi Sinem, all of which I was still sitting in circle with. And, you know, they're basically insurgents and separatists. And we'll leave it at that. But the thing was, you know, it was all instigated by agencies that were testing things out. They did this to a whole bunch of people. I mean, you know, when I think back to the things that they used to do and say about Rolling Thunder and how he had to move from one place to another and how he was living on a run, and I remember walking with him down the road and a truck would come and we'd have to jump off to the side of the road and I go, what the hell are we doing? He'd go, well, they'll shoot you. All these things were unbelievable to me at the time. You know, and now we're seeing these very same groups that went after me, that went after Art Bell, that went after you, that went after a lot of people. That went after Wolf Moon Dancer. They went after a lot of people. They went after Dremel Amokiza. They went after all the teachers.
Sakash Alpo, she said that there was this, the front group, they all they had was just an address, a P.O. box, and they attacked her after she came back with her messages from the elders at O'Reilly. So it's just amazing.
Right. You know, I've seen these things with Mary Thunder. And yet, while they were saying all these different things, and it came out of the Lakota Nation, while they were saying all these different things, okay, she was sitting there with the Lakota holy men.
Yeah.
Wasn't she?
Yeah, that's right.
She sat there with, you know, Crow Dog and Grandma Kitty. She sat there with Wallace. She sat there with Orville Looking Horse. She sat there with all these people. It's like, you know, don't give in to gossip. If you hear something, then do the Indian way, Indian. Go up and meet face to face and say, I have questions about you. I've come here to ask these questions of you from myself. So I'm going to experience you. That's the Indian way. The other Indian way is if you've done all these horrific things, like in my case, I carry Chinupa. Well, what the other world doesn't know, because they don't know, because they're not educated about our ways, and our ways mean Amate, you know, in 47 Art Bell shows, I never once didn't get up on the air and start off by saying Amate.
Uh-huh.
I never got up there and said, I'm a Native American and this is the way it is. Somebody else said that.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And it's documented.
Oh, yeah, you're Hopi, you're Lakota,
you know,
you're this.
But the thing is, you know, you get into this stuff, this crap, and it's like, all I are is people who don't have lives that try to stop people who are doing things.
Yeah.
They try to stop people who, people are listening to their message, because they're trying to create their little activists, breakaway rebel groups that don't come from the place that the elders came. I came from the elders. I don't know where they come from. I started off by not fighting them. I started off by, because my Hopi elders said, well, just let them be who they are. And then it just grew and grew and grew. And so finally one day I said, well, I'm going to start confronting them. And all I ever had to say to any one of these clowns was, you come here with me. We'll sit Indian Nippy. I'll take my Chinupa, and you tell me what truth is. But they never showed up. They never showed up, you know. I mean, I'm going to say something now that's pretty radical. If it wasn't for the Mete people and everything that they did to help the ways of the indigenous people, nobody would even know what a sweat lodge is.
Right.
Okay, so we brought it out to the world. And now that it's out to the world, you cannot deny that it is what it is. You cannot deny that these things happen. You cannot deny that there is sacred, and it's understanding the ways of sacred in the ways that we talk about and the ways that we do. I don't bring people to a cult. I've been up here in the mountains for 4 years now, because I wanted to get away from doing that, because everyone was accusing me of doing that. And I was going, what the hell are they talking about? I don't have, I'm not like, you know, the Crystal Cathedral. I don't have, you know, 400,000 followers. It just so happens that when I go out to the wilderness and I do a gathering, 1,000, 2,000 people show up. Well, they must have got a calling. You know, the way Pete Keshe taught it to me was, you do the sweat lodge, you don't worry about who comes. Because we used to go, grandfather, somebody's coming and they're not supposed to be here. This guy's from Ames, this guy's from here. And he would go, if we're doing the lodge and we did the sacred stones and we did our prayers, he'd say, here, they're supposed to be here. If they're not supposed to be here, the lodge will throw them out. And it always happens that way. Okay? You know? So, like, you know, stop listening to gossip, because that's what you're doing to yourself. You listen to gossip, you listen to the media, you watch all these images playing in front of you on the screen all the time. All you do is watch movies, you know. It was like, who is the guy, Bill Maher from Real TV?
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name? He said, and sometimes he's really funny. He goes, so, you know, why is this guy getting up telling me that he's just like me? Talking about the presidential campaigns, okay? He goes, he says, you're just like me. That means you sit down and watch TV for 14 hours a day? You know? Tell me that you're not like me. You know? Get into, you know, don't come in and attack me, because number one, you don't stand a chance. Number two, you don't attack me because it's not the way we were taught. The thing is, you come up and ask me a question, and then I'll say, well, sit down and experience it. So I'm sitting down at the ceremony, and I have all my bodyguards. And they come running up to me, and it's raining. It's storming. It's doing all sorts of horrific things. And they come up to me, and they say to me, grandfather. I go, yes. Ain is here. And I go, oh, very observant. They're here to get you. And I said, oh. And so I introduced them to two guys' name, sitting right next to me by the fire. We're drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. And they don't know what to do. And the guy's name tell me, yeah, well, we prayed for all this fair weather. And I said, well, you better pray a little harder because you're in the middle of it. Listen, how are you going to get out? Okay, so things go on. Things happen. These are true stories. And I sit there, and they go, and they watch what we do. And Arbor-looking horse comes in. Hopi Sinem come in. Blackfoot chief comes in. Apache chief comes in. Aboriginal chief from Australia comes in. Everybody's sitting there. Everybody's good people. Everybody's good people. We sit there, we do a lodge. And I'm not saying this to name drop. I'm saying this so people understand the damn truth. We're sitting there doing a lodge. People come up and I say, well, we're going to do this lodge and Orville Looking Horse is going to pour the water. So Orville comes down. He gets ready to pour the water and everybody comes running up with their chinupa so that they can get the merit badge. He tells them all, put them on top of the lodge. He tells me and one other person, bring your chinupa into lodge. So, people, you listen to the stories. You listen to the bullshit. Listen to what really happens, and then ask why. Because when you see it with your own eyes, when you feel it with your own heart, you will know what truth is and what truth isn't. It's that simple. Nobody in a book can tell you what God is, or what God is for you, or what you need to do for your personal salvation, if there is a reason for salvation. I think that the only thing there is a reason to keep mental clarity, to realize that you're not crazy, to realize that the voices that you're talking to you are spirit voices, and to understand and discern which is the spirit voice of the Tunkhashalas and which is the spirit voice of the demons. The demons are everywhere. We hear these people talk, oh, I got this message from Akaroyana. I said, who the hell is Akaroyana? He comes from the 15th dimension of the 9th planet of the purple universe. And I go, okay. I said, well, how do you know he's not an alcoholic? Okay? I mean, just because somebody's gone or somebody tells you they're an alien or somebody's passed over doesn't mean they don't have problems. You don't understand the pathways and the highways of the spiritual world. And even in the spiritual world, you've got to use the 4 D's. Discretion, discernment, attachment, and determination. You have to use the 4D reality. It's no different than this reality. As a matter of fact, it's greater than this reality. Because when this reality dissolves, and it always dissolves, everything here is temporal. No matter what you're doing, it always dissolves. If you're in a relationship, the moment and the fire and the fury of that relationship and the romance and the heat, you know, it all dissolves because it keeps changing and you have to change with it. You have to be flexible enough to change with it, and the only way you can change with it is by owning yourself. Oti Pimsuak. We who own ourselves. Oti Pimsuak. That's what you have to be. Because this world is a great mystery, isn't it?
Oh.
How can we judge things to be one thing when in the next minute they change? So does that mean that we dissolve everything? That we run around in chaos?
We're paranoid.
Cry and we whine? It means this is the way it's always been. You know, so we're going through these things. And yeah, we're affected by the planets and we're affected by the sun twist. What do you think? Aho mitakwe asin, we are all one, means. It means that we are all one with the universe. It doesn't mean that I'm all one with you. I know that if I sat in a room with Donald Rumsfeld and what's your name, Rice, I'm not one with them, okay? But I am on another level for human beings. On another level, what happens to the earth happens to the sun. I've done many talks where I showed things, pictures, NASA pictures, of flares, disturbances going on with the sun, and then I would do an overlay, and I would say, now the overlay that I'm putting over this has got to do with where the major areas of conflict are in the world today. And strangely enough, where those conflicts and those wars were, where those sun flares and sunspots were appearing.
Oh.
So the point was, I don't know why this is. I know that it is. I know that the earth interacts with the sun. I know that our emotion creates the outcome of whatever our reality is. I know that. I know that if we're hateful and if we're fearful and we go into the garden, nothing grows. I know that. I don't know why. I know that that is. I know that when they asked me to come with the elders to Clayton, New Mexico, and pray because of the drought, I know that it rained. I don't know why. I can't give you the scientific explanation to go on Wolf Blitzer's news show on CNN and say, well, this is precisely why this happened. I have no idea. I know that when we believe, and when we touch spirit, and when we touch the earth, and we love it so much that we're willing to cry about it, and not be ashamed of our tears, I know that when we ask her for something, it happens. But why do I have to know why? Isn't that why grandfather used to call it the great mystery? Isn't that what Wankantanka is all about? Wankantanka is like, you little mice, you little fleas who run around on the back of the buffalo, what do you know?
Sure ain't scientific, that's for sure.
And there's no logical linear explanation. Sometimes it just happens. You know, you sit there with the person and the person goes into the nippy and you're sitting there and everybody's singing and everybody's praying and everybody's crying. And the next day, you know, the person goes back to the doctor and they're supposed to be dying of cancer and all of a sudden the doctor goes, I don't know how to explain this, but you're Your cancer's gone.
Well, you know, there is a doctrine in both science, especially in research and in archaeology, called serendipity and how important it is.
That was a group in the 70s.
Oh, well, that too. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, things happen and they happen, you know.
Well, you know, if you look at something in horror and you look at something in judgment, you constrict everything. And you no longer see the little things in life. Like I said, hey, I got up today and walked down and worked in the garden and did what I had to do and I wasn't in pain. That's the miracles of life.
Mm.
You know, I got up and I'm thinking and I'm upset and things are happening. And so you get lost in that instead of realizing, isn't it amazing that my mind is clear? See? And like, okay, I had a fella who's married to a woman, calls me up, he's going to commit suicide. I said, why are you going to commit suicide? He goes, well, I went to this ceremony, and my wife went home with a woman. I said, okay. I said, well, that hurts. That really hurts. It hurts everything in your male pride. It hurts everything in your so-called image that you created yourself as a warrior. It creates everything in the dogma that you believe. It just hurts it. And so you're angry and you hurt. I said, so what are you going to do? Well, you know, I'm going to commit suicide. Turned into, I'm going to get even with her. And I'm like, okay. I'm going to get even to her with her for what? So then I go and I talk to her. Because she calls me up and goes, something just happened in my life. I don't know how to talk about it. And da, 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 and so-and-so wants to kill me. And so-and-so is doing all these lies. And I'm like, so what happened in your life? Well, finally we get through the fact and she tells me what happened. None of them know that I'm talking to the other one. Okay? And I said, okay. So what you did, why did you do it? Did you do it to get even? Or did you not know how it happened?
OCO.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hello, Life Bandage. I'm Donnie Osmond. You know, with my hectic schedule doing the Donnie and Marie show at the Flamingo in Las Vegas, all of the television appearances I do, my daily radio show, touring across the country doing concerts, being a father, a husband, a grandfather. Yes, I'm a grandfather three times. It keeps me very, very busy, as you can only imagine.
Go away, little girl.
I'll always be grateful that I was introduced to Protandim, and then my doctor, Dr. Daniel Royal, studied it. He ran tests, verified it yet again on me that Protandim does exactly what it's supposed to do. Thanks to Protandim, I know that I'm doing all I can do to fight the effects of aging and oxidative stress from the inside and doing it naturally, helping my genes do exactly what they're already programmed to do.
I cry each night, my tears, I feel like a teenager again.
It's been quite a ride and promises to be even more in the future and years to come. So congratulations, LifeVantage and Protandim. I think it's fantastic.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
That's a touchy thing, so we've got to take a couple of minutes on this. But the thing is, he spent his whole life abusing her, putting her down, calling her stupid, calling her incompetent. Everything in their relationship is about him criticizing her and putting her down. So she finally finds some being who doesn't condemn her. This is a woman screaming in pain. This is a woman trying to fight every day of her life being told she's less than, she's not worthy of. Now, bring this back to him, he can't understand that.
always loved her. I said, yeah. And did you tell her to shut up and always keep her place? Well, you know, a woman is, I said, you just said it. I said,
three words, and he told you.
You stopped accepting each other as human beings. You stopped accepting her as a human being. You put her into a role. And every time she moves out of that role, you hit her on the head. And then this thing happens, and you go, the Creator's condemning you. And you're going to put your pipe away, you're going to put everything away, you're going to kill yourself. Well, if you kill yourself, you're going to come back here 10,000 times. And you may come back as a prostitute. So I don't know if that's what you want to do. Or do you want to understand what happened? Yes, what happened is tragic to you. What happened disrupted both of your lives. But is there anything in this world, is there anything in the other worlds that the Creator didn't create? Well, no. I said, okay. So the question is, why did the Creator create this? See, we have to stop. We judge others because we have judged ourselves. And we put ourselves into these constraints based upon what everybody else told us. Now, I'm not condoning homosexuality. I'm not condemning it. I'm saying it's as old as the human race. And there are points in anything in the human race where when it becomes too much, it's out of balance. But this is the condition that has always been here. The condition of power, you know, it's like going through the secret of the seven seals. And the first three seals, or the first three chakras, are pain, power, and procreation. And then you go to the heart, and then you go to the other three that bring you up to the Godhead, in some languages, that bring you up into the realization of being the Washashua Khan, becoming the sachem, the holy man, or the holy woman. Because there's no difference. The woman can do what the man does, and the man can do what the woman does, and sometimes one does what the other can't do. And it's all about relationships, it's all about balance, it's all about commonality, you know? I may not be good at putting the beads together with the needle, but I can come up with the design. I may not be good at doing, you know, we're not living in Neanderthal reality. We're not living with me go out, me big hunter, me hit the elk on the head, bring home, you clean. We're not doing that now, because everything comes wrapped in plastic. Okay, so now we're being shown the other parts of our relationship that are incongruous. And when whether it's the she that does that to the he, everything that you do and everything that you come up with and every idea you put down, you're criticized. You know, well, then we can get into Freudian psychology, which is like, you know, is which one of your parents did this to you? Because the strange thing about life is when you go through life, you emulate what your parents were.
And I did this. I became my dad, you know. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And it was a hard thing to face, Robert, because my dad wasn't, I won't describe it. He had his moments, but, you know, my first wife described him as the meanest man in the world. And my dad just really didn't understand, you know. And, you know, as I got older and things didn't work out right in my life, and, you know, I started going that way because, I mean, what do you learn? I mean, you learn parenting and everything from, you know, from your parents. And I'll tell you, I can see the plan that Creator had. You know, my first wife died 10 years ago, uh-huh. And then I married Betty, who is the Sergeant Betty. She was, you know, she's the one that joined
Sergeant Betty.
She's the one that joined the Army when she was 33 years old because her old man left her and went through basic.
I just know her as such a gentle person.
Well, yeah, well, she. Yeah. She's tough, you know, and
but being with you, she have to be.
Well, you know, and so yeah, but yeah, go ahead and talk. You know, we
Yeah, we become. Go ahead, talk about that.
Well, you know, I mean, I was sitting there one day, and I was yelling and screaming, and the woman I love, Shoshana, who you know, said to me, she's got this great ability of, she never gets emotional back, thank God, because we don't, you know, throw things around the house. I've had those. But she said to me, I got to ask you a question, in the middle of this whole thing. I said, right. She went, did your father yell and scream all the time? Is that how we dealt with things? I had to stop. Because that's all I remember of my father. He was always yelling, screaming, and threatening. And, like, it was like, I couldn't deal with it. It was like, I had become my father. I wasn't my father's son. I became my father. Now, the good thing about that...
You're more efficient at it, probably, than your dad ever was.
Oh, of course, I was better. I had it down. I was scientific. I did surgical hits, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
I mean, I got it down. It was fine. I could rip your heart out in 5 minutes when I was angry.
Oh, yeah.
And I was being the big raging bull.
Oh,
okay.
Using
and the
words.
Thing is, you know, I turned around and I said, you know, you're absolutely right. And then I had to go through this whole thing. It's a month of me going through and trying to figure out how this happened. Because I did not like my father, okay? I did not respect my father. There was no reason to respect this man. This man never taught me any wisdom. All he was an angry, screaming bully, okay? That's how I remember him. Plus, he was an alcoholic. And you know, I sat there and I went, you know, this thing happens invisibly. It happens without our knowledge. So why... You know, and I always go to Pentecostals and say, so how is this, why is this happening? And you know, that's part of the miracle of the part of our life that's going around the wheel. You know, we keep going around the wheel. And one generation has the opportunity to correct the mistakes of the previous generation. Because you're given the very same things. You're made from the same genomes. And what you do is, if you can get above that and beyond that, then you cause change. You see? And the only way that you can get to that place is by, first you have to accept before you can receive. If you accept, then you can receive. And if you can receive, then you can understand. And then you have the opportunity of changing it. Because you don't have to accept it as written faith. You can say, well, I don't agree with this. And it has nothing to do when you're under all those hormones and you're a teenager and you're rebelling against everything that ever existed. It has to do with as you reach maturity. And you suddenly decide, oh, this is what grandfather meant about you have to earn the right to be a human being. You have to earn the right to keep holding the scepter, otherwise it could be taken away. You know, and yeah, I became my father. I was this raging bull. And, you know, when I couldn't get my way, I used power to get my way. And, you know, that never works. Because the only way that a change happens is by a consensus of consciousness. If I agree, and you agree, and she agrees, and Fred agrees, that this red-tailed hawk is flying over our heads and talking to us, then that's what happened. But if I turn around and go, what do you mean? That's what happened. That's the way it is. Well, I can intimidate you into that. But you know, you'll never have the magic. And the magic, I saw Frank Fool's Crow. Grandpa did things you could not explain. Science could never explain. If they all lived another 1,000 years. I saw the power that Pete catches at. And you know, those guys never yelled. They never yelled. They never bullied. They just talked to you. And they were so gentle. And you wondered why they had all this respect. And when I say, Grandpa Crow, you know what I'm talking about.
I mean, when he spoke, nobody said a word. Everybody listened. And so, you know, that goes back to Yeshua and love and compassion. When he spoke love and compassion. Now, that didn't mean that on the way to being the holy man, he wasn't an asshole in his life. But he took the time and was willing to learn from it. And he was willing to learn from it without destroying the relationships around him. So that those relationships persevered and he grew wise. And that's where we're in now. That's part of this purification. We're getting all these emotional things. We all got into relationships. We don't know why we got into relationships. And most of the reasons why we got into the relationships were false. So we're learning on the run. We're learning along the way. We're learning by doing and living. We have to be a lot more compassionate and forgiving with ourselves. And allow that change to happen. If it's not right, there's something wrong. Do you have to live for 60 years and all of a sudden your children don't talk to you and everybody's hiding from you? Is that the way of the role of Ate, father? That's not the role. See, it goes back to the family hearth, right? That's not the role of Ate. That's not the role of father. So we have to learn it. And then the other thing comes like, oh my God, I'm hitting middle age. But I'm still 19. Well, you're not 19.
I was just saying that the other day. I turned 50.
You know, someone said to me the other day, I was talking to a friend I haven't talked to in a long time, and he went, yeah, well, I'm getting older. I said, well, I'm not getting older. I'm just getting whiter. You know, I'm becoming white. Everything about me is Gandalf the White, you know. It's like, and you know, I sit there, and, you know, again, how precious is life? Well, I've seen a lot of battles in my life. I haven't lost the compassion. I still look at people that a lot of people would condemn, and I go, what do you want to do? Sometimes those people are the way they are because they're ill. They're really ill. Sometimes they're diseased. They're possessed. Sometimes it's because no one ever listened to them, and no one ever gave them any credibility. No one ever gave them any encouragement to be what they are. And the reason why they didn't give them encouragement to be what they are is because they didn't know who they were.
Well, they're depraved on account of they were deprived.
Yeah. And, you know, so I feel insecure, so you're going to feel insecure. Listen, Mother Huffer, if I got to live through this, you're going to live through this too.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, why? Why? Why would you put the curse of ignorance on your children, so to speak? Why not ask them to rise up above it, you know? And we can take that and bring that bingo, like a boomerang, right back to relationship. So the first thing you're going to do is be, you know, chop your head off. Well, that's cool. Oh, man, you're really Thunder Bear. Why not be Chief Loving Bear? Why not try to understand why this happens? Why not realize there's something beyond your immediate perception of what the human relationship is supposed to be about so that you can actually get into the human relationship and you can start the healing cycle rather than the judging cycle? Because if I charge a situation, you're going to react. If you charge a situation and I meet the charge, and I don't let it go through me, I'm going to react. And what do we have? We have war. What do we have going on with the Middle East? You got a bunch of ignorant people who don't know any other way of life. They don't even know what they're fighting for.
Yeah.
They're killing their own people. They're killing innocent children and women. They're just killing people. I look at it and I go, this is insanity. It's total insanity. There's no reason. They're not sitting here fighting for their homeland. They're not sitting here fighting for their belief. They're not sitting here fighting for their survival. I mean, you know, when the Europeans came here and they were taking the lands from the people, we were fighting for our survival. We were fighting for our lands. We were fighting for our belief. You know, and the things that started to happen in
the last century in the 70s and 60s and all of that, we were arguing about our way of life. We were arguing about the right to belief. We weren't just hitting each other. We weren't just going, I mean, you know, everybody's reverting to Neanderthal. And we're reverting to Neanderthal reactionary beings in relationships. And it's not going to work, people, because the first one you're going to get Neanderthal with is you. Am I making any sense? So stop the freaking war. Start the healing process. Because you're going to a place right now where more that you experience and more that you see, you're not going to be able to explain. That's what the Hopi elders taught me. That's what Pete Kesh has taught me. He said, I'm glad I'm at the end of my walk. He says, I don't want to go where you're going.
Yeah.
He says, you're going to a place that I don't want to know. I'll come see you after it. When it's over, I'll be sitting here by the lodge. Come in. We'll do some stones together.
I know. Maybe he'll have all the sunglasses that disappeared, you know.
I don't know. I'm still looking for those sunglasses. Where did those sunglasses go?
Oh, yeah.
Like they're sitting right there next to that pack of cigarettes and that $20 bill. You know you got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing is, if we move into this movement of compassion, and it doesn't mean stupid and weak. It means, because it takes a lot of courage to do it. You know, it takes a lot of courage not to react. It takes a lot of courage not just to be, what was it, the Hopi used to call the Navajo in the old days, they used to call them the skull crushers. Because they were nomads that didn't have a home, that came from a strange place, and they had these stone tomahawks. And they just used to crush skulls. And Hopi is the peaceful ones, right?
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today. And do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs. And I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put them on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay? But aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical, and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the 2-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase 1 detox, and that in itself is a free radical, and obviously many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
So this is no aspersion on
the Dene, nor is it aspersion on the Hopi. It means the old way, you know? It means the old way before all this stuff happened. Because it happened to everybody. Hello? It happened to everybody. And the Mayans were the ones who wrote it down about the, and when they wrote about this in the Popol Vuh and their other sacred books, when they wrote about the cycle of the serpents and the cycle of the serpentine, understanding the difference between those energies. And the cycle of the serpent is always the cycle of destruction. And in destruction, there's never any growth. You know? And we're right now in about the epitome of the cycle of the serpent.
Yeah.
The whole world is on fire.
Yeah.
Everybody's shooting everybody. Everybody's writing these email things. They've got all these hate groups all over the place. They usually don't know what the hell they're talking about. But the thing is, you know, when I went to school, and I was back in that rebellious days, you remember those were the days of the Beatles and things?
Mm-hmm.
And the Rolling Stones.
Harper, you and I both live on Long Island.
Yeah, on Long Island, you know.
Long Island.
You know. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and fame. You know, this revolution in the streets, you know. It's like, you know, yeah, we were going, and I remember talking to this man, Francis Chris, who was one of my art teachers, and I was talking to him, and I was angry at everything, and I was angry at this, and he looked at me, and he said, and he listened to me for like 2 hours one day, and I was really lucky that he did that. And he turned and he said to me, here's my question to you. I've heard everything that you're saying, and everything that you're saying is true. I didn't understand it. He was like 74 at the time. And, you know, he says, everything you're saying is true, but nothing's changed. It's always been that way. He said, but, you know, with everything I hear you saying, you're not coming up with one single solution. Now, that stopped me dead in my tracks. Because the whole thing is about, as we continue from one generation to another, as my hand goes to your hand, as father goes to son, and mother goes to daughter, and as we go from grandparent to parent to child, we're all connected. And the thing is to move on and to improve it. And you know, the hardest way to do it, and yet the easiest and fastest way to do it, is if you see the insanity, you don't have to participate in it. That's called walking the middle road. Walk in the middle road means I see this, but I don't have to play with it. I don't have to accept it. I don't have to embrace it. If you're sitting in that relationship and something's going wrong, well, instead of fighting and charging the thing, for crying out loud, go away for a couple of days or go with each other up to a mountain and say, what's going on here? That's what a human being does.
Don't pick that thing up.
Don't pick that snake up. And don't spit in the face of the cougar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, these times are trying times. And they're a time when we're moving from the patriarchy back to the matriarchy. Indigenous cultures have always been matriarchies. The existence of patriarchal Native American society structures is artificial. It came from someplace else. This is the place of the mother. And the place of the mother is dictated by the rules of the mother. Our thoughts are given to us by Tenkashla, by grandfather. That's where our ideas come from. But you know, do you know one relationship where the guy didn't get the idea from her?
Mm-hmm.
She was the one who said, well, we've got to make things different here, you know?
Well, I was astounded at, you know, I was reading some of the apocryphal works. I was astounded at how ignorant apostles really were. I mean, here's an apostle talking to Jesus, and they're saying, Master, you know, you and I both know that women are not worthy of life. I can see Jesus raise his finger and he's saying, but, you know, it's kind of like, oh,
yeah.
We've come a ways from that.
Well, yes, we've come a ways from that, And we also have to realize that what we were shown, and this is gospel, what we were shown is not what was said.
Mm-hmm.
We were only shown one side of the story. You had Jesus walking with 12 apostles. What they don't tell you about is the 12 women. What they don't tell you about is that Mary always made sure that they had food to eat and a place to sleep. What they don't tell you about is it was always the women who figured out how to finance what these guys wanted to do. Okay. So we're only hearing one side of the story because it all came filtered through the mask of patriarchal society. The church could not have anything going against it that could show that, you know, a woman had power too, you know. And yet the stories that we have here, if we really care to look into it, there are many, many stories of powerful women and women who shared the throne equally.
Well, maybe that's why there's 24 elders around the throne.
Oh, well, 12 women, 12 men. It goes back to that. The balance, you know, it's like, it all goes back to, and we could even close with this, the chalupa, the bow is the woman, and the stem is the male. Creation doesn't happen unless the stem and the bow are together. The power of the chalupa is in the pipe being joined. The male and the female. The alpha and the omega. This is the 21st century. We have new language. Without the balance of male and female, there is no creation. There is only stagnation. In learning how to be human, we first must understand what within us is male and female. Then we move to the relationship and acknowledge the joining of the male and the female. Just like when you say the prayers and you bring the chalupa together. And when you first do it, you know, when you break, when you end the ceremony, you break the pipe apart, right?
Yep.
And when they begin the ceremony, they have the two parts and they say the prayers and then they join them. It's all about joining the male and the female. And the male and the female, to join your relationship, has to start within you, within me, within each one of us individually. Because we are both parts. We are both male and we are both female. The difference between the Christos and the Melchizedek is that the Melchizedek evolved into the Christos and the Christos became the male and the female part of it. And then the flower of life kept growing. It is all about that. The whole thing about the Christos is the understanding and the accepting of the balance of the male and the female. In that balance and in that union, creation can occur. When creation can occur, you can change the way things are.
Hmm.
You get the widow.
Oh. Well, that's a good place. That's a good place to stop. Well, Dr. Goswell, thank you so much for being with us. And good night, folks.
This is Yasa Sago, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho.
我是有却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却却
discarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault, This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
Let the truth